Good evening. A few months ago, I received an email from someone who I didn't know. It's not someone that doesn't live around here and has never come to Kanando and was new to Zen practice, had not been practicing for very long. And his story was not unusual. And I'll read you his whole message. He said, "In the past few months, I have been dealing with past feelings and memories that are very painful. I know intellectually they happened in the past, and I cannot change the events, but I also know I never dealt with them when I should have. These thoughts and feelings are very difficult to simply recognize and put aside. Modern psychology says to live with them, and then they will pass. What is the Zen take on the past? And how would a practicing Buddhist deal with past pains?" I expect there is a very practical approach that can help me put a different perspective on it. Yeah, interesting. What is the Zen take? How would a practicing Buddhist deal with it? One question. And then the next breath. I know there's a practical answer that can help me. So before you can answer the question about what would a Buddhist do, it's already giving an answer. His question is about his happiness. He's really asking, how can I be happy again? How would a practicing Buddhist deal with this? There's a very practical approach. How can I be happy again? And the sub-theme of that is, I deserve to be happy. This is very, very usual kind of approach that we take in the Western world, in the modern world, to suffering, to problems that arise, to difficult problems. This is what we do. What is the Zen take? How would a practicing Buddhist deal with it? What's the school solution? What's the answer? What's the formula? This is a very Western way of addressing problems. It's much different than our practice. Much different. If we take this approach to trying to resolve our pain and unhappiness by looking for the answer or the approach, it only increases the unhappiness. It only increases the suffering. It increases the suffering because what we're saying is, I am not happy with my unhappiness. That's what this is saying. I don't like my unhappiness. I'm not happy with that. That only compounds the suffering. So what do we do when we find ourselves in that situation? Well, what we learn from just our everyday experience when this happens, after days, weeks, or months of looking for the answer to our grief, we realize that we lost something. Something's been destroyed. And so we grieve over it and we suffer over it, and we realize, if we pay attention, we realize that we have to rebuild something. Not give me back what I lost, but it's gone. I have to rebuild it. What is the Zen take? Yes, what is the Zen take? This is not the Zen take. Make me happy again. The Zen take is our practice, which can seem to be very complex when we first come to it. You know, all the instructions about how to sit and all the sutras and all the ceremony, it can look very complex when you first approach the practice. And you say, well, how is all this complexity going to solve my problem? Well, it can be summarized pretty easily. There is a kind of formula to our practice. Three-step process. Sit straight. Let go. Take it all in. That's the basis of our practice. When we return to that approach, we are rebuilding our situation, and we're dropping off our concern for unhappiness. Experiences like this young man described in his email, these kinds of experiences are terribly painful, can be very painful. And the depth of the pain is proportional to the personal experience. The experience, the relationship we have with someone, and how it gets disrupted or destroyed. Especially if it's someone who we know or knew very well, someone who we were fond of, if that relationship is disrupted, that's painful. That's where suffering comes in. So if, if there's a natural disaster, tree falls down and falls on our car, or there's an act of God, we will have problems. And life becomes difficult for a time. We fix our problem. And as we live our life, we may have health problems, financial problems, problems with our living situation. But those problems don't have to be emotionally crippling. We know they're not directed at us personally. Tree falls on your car. Nature didn't single you out. Drop a tree on your car. So we don't take it personally, and it doesn't cripple us. But we do suffer when we feel that another person has caused us pain, or we've lost another person. That's when we suffer. And we also suffer because we have memories, painful memories of these kinds of feelings, of these emotions from the past, like his email said. I don't know the details of what he said his past problem was. Happened in the past and could not change the events. I don't know exactly what he meant. But quite often it's because we felt betrayed, we felt ignored, we felt not appreciated, or in the past we were abused, we weren't acknowledged, we were put down, or we may have been attacked even. Those things create problems, and when we recall them, they're painful. When we feel that our value, our own value as a person, has been diminished or threatened, then we feel our entire being and our entire life is diminished. The feeling of abuse or being ignored or not heard occurs in the present moment. That's when it happens. In our personal relationship and right now. In some kind of conversation, in some activity, or maybe something in writing. You know, you get a Dear John email. And when that happens, we feel frustration and anger. And we are likely to carry around that painful emotion all day or weeks or months or even years into the future. That painful moment, we carry it around. And we want our happiness back. So this kind of suffering is really a problem of how we see ourselves, how our self-image, how we envision ourselves. And how we feel or imagine or even hope that people will see us or think of us. As long as we are convinced that other people like us and they respect us, they admire us and want to be with us, our self-esteem is pretty high, pretty good. And we feel very good, and our image of ourselves is very good. But if we lose any of that, we don't feel so good. And the usual response is to blame others for how we feel. She ignored me, or he disrespected me, that kind of thing. We tend to blame others for when we don't feel so good. We do that without considering what is the true source of our suffering, which is we rely, in our culture, we rely on others to support our own image of ourself. And this, of course, is a delusion. This image of ourself. And this is not a creative, happy way of life. It's because then we're always a little frightened that somebody may change their opinion of us or something. This is what we expose ourselves to when we really don't understand who we are. So if a lightning bolt hits your house and creates very severe physical damage. It's not personal, so there are no hurt feelings. Yet the thoughtless word of another person has the power to generate suffering in us, even though you look around and you can't find any damage. So why do we give this power over ourselves to other people? Why do we do that? Doesn't make sense. story about Bodhidharma, who brought Zen practice to China. The monk comes to Bodhidharma, unhappy monk. He says, "I'm troubled. My mind is troubled. Please appease my mind." And Bodhidharma says, "Okay, bring it here." And the monk says, "Well, when I look for it, I can't get a hold of it." And Bodhidharma says, "There, I clarified your mind." Famous story. So the image of ourself is not who we are. It is a delusion. It is made up. Our ego, or our what we call small self, is not who we are. It's not our true nature. So it is a mistake, big mistake, to depend on our ego for how to live our life. You know, so many visits to therapists and psychiatrists are because our egos are damaged. And if we rely on the on an image of ourself to feel good, we put ourselves at risk for painful experiences because our ego is very fragile. Our small self is very fragile. So this small mind that we have that is so fragile is just a picture that we create. And maybe we create a very pretty picture of ourselves, but it's not substantial. If you paint a picture of yourself with watercolor, then that's beautiful. If you throw some water on it, it's immediately destroyed. All the colors run. Or if you throw some solvent on an oil painting, you'll ruin it. Very fragile. And of course, this phenomenon is explained by Dogen in his writing called The Painting of a Rice Cake. Painting of a rice cake cannot satisfy hunger. If you try to eat the painting of a rice cake, you are trying to grasp enlightenment from outside. And can't be happy, can never be satisfied. So the images we create of ourselves and these kind of paintings, they're not reality. Papier-mâché. So relying on image of ourself cannot bring us to understanding. And we will be subject to delusion over and over again. And like I said, a foolish word from someone can make us suffer. So the cause of our suffering is that we want to believe that we, ourself, is something substantial. We delude ourselves that this so-called self is permanent, and it is based on our attachment. So the problem is we fall in love with our small self. And Suzuki Roshi said in the Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, because we cannot accept the truth of transiency, we will suffer. So we make up images of ourselves because we do not accept transiency. We do not accept, we are unwilling to accept that things change. So when we have a very painful experience and disrupts our life and we suffer, we don't want to believe that it's changed. Give me back my happiness. What does the Zen take for getting back my happiness? So our practice is about accepting the impermanent nature of everything. When we have that acceptance, we will have understanding and peace of mind. And we will have caring and a soft mind. Because we will have let go defending the image of ourself. And we will be able to accept our hurt feelings rather than try to push them away. Our practice will bring us warm mind and warm feelings. Then we will be able to forgive the other person for whatever word they said or whatever act they did that made us feel so bad. And with that kind of attitude, an accepting attitude, we will see that what they did or said was really an act of foolishness on their part. That they are not inherently evil or inherently out to harm us. They just were foolish. Foolish as a result of their own suffering. So instead of being angry at them for something they said, we recognize that what they said was out of their own suffering. In that way, we start to see people and we start to see all existence in a very universal way with bodhisattva eyes. And as we learn to forgive other people, we learn to forgive ourselves. Forgive ourselves for our own foolishness. And the forgiveness that we direct toward ourselves shouldn't be a kind of sentimental, you know, poor me kind of thing. Shouldn't be sentimental. It should be the forgiveness we give to ourselves should have confidence. Confidence in ourself. In other words, when we forgive ourselves, we are really acknowledging that we do have the inherent capacity to respond positively to any situation, even one that brings us grief. We have the capacity to respond positively. Because we have come to the understanding that our true nature is not diminished by whatever anyone else says or does, or whatever act of God comes our way. Our true nature is not diminished. And we develop this understanding simply through our practice. So no matter how other people may abuse us, maybe unwittingly or on purpose, the absolute value of our true nature can never be diminished. Only the ego suffers, the small mind, that has created some image of who we are in the relative world. And then, of course, we vigorously defend that image. This is what we understand through our practice. So as we continue our practice day by day, our mind becomes less stubborn, less habitual, and softer, and less attached to an image of itself. It is the soft mind that readily forgives others, readily forgives itself. This is the best antidote for painful memories that this email spoke about. Does anyone have a question? Yes, Scott.
Thank you for your talk, Les. I'm wondering, suppose that you know someone who seems to have fragile ego, maybe not anything that you say, but they tell you all the time about other people who hurt them.
Oh.
And I wonder what you can do to help alleviate their suffering.
There is no medicine we can give, or magic words we can give. No bumper sticker. But what we can try to do is encourage them to see the source of their own suffering. So, for example, you might ask, what is it you've lost? What is it you feel you've lost? And the next question is, do you feel you can restore it? So it's pushing them to really look at what's going on and to help them see they do have the capacity to rebuild or restore. Our practice is about restoration. Restoration hardware. That's a good name. Our practice is about restoration. Restoring our awareness of our own wisdom and awareness of our own true being. We suffer because we forgot who we are. So the way to encourage people when they're suffering is to try to guide them in a direction where they can restore their understanding. I think what we have to avoid is looking for the answer. Scott, I'm suffering. Help me. Okay, just a minute. Let's see. Doesn't work. So we just start the inquiry that leads to restoration. Thank you. Yes, Anna.
It seems like sometimes it's a useful step to use a little small mind to take some accountability to make sure you're not harming others or you're not going to harm yourself making the same mistakes in the future when that happens to you. If you lose someone or someone harms you, sometimes there's something that you did do that you should be accountable to.
Oh. Oh, so to recognize when we do something. Yes. That's part of our practice too. Thank you. Carolina.
The Buddha says in the Dharmapada that we don't go around saying, oh, this person did this to me, this person did that to me, because when you do that, like maybe this friend to Scott, the hatred never ends.
Yes. Dhammapada is very interesting and very useful and very beautiful. And after we read something like that, you say, that's great. And then you say, how do I get there? How do I have a mind like that? But just to hear those words is the starting point. Thank you. Umar.
Yes. Two-part question. One was that you said our practice said sit up straight. And what was the second thing?
Let go.
Let go. And take it all in. The second thing was that somebody came up to me the other day at work and said, I hate you.
And really?
Yeah, they said that to me. And I said, looked at them very calmly and I said, no, that's too much power that you're giving to me. I'm going to give this back to you because I don't want to have this much power over you. You should keep this to yourself. This is just giving away too much power to me for you to hate me. I think you should keep this. This is something that is yours. And I didn't quite understand. They walked away confused.
Good. It's good.
I just don't want to get that kind of responsibility.
That's good. That's very good. Good response. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so do we have any announcements tonight?